America, the world. This is Mark Ancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Again, we want to greet our new conventional affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that's going to be bringing Mark Ancos, America, and RBN to a much wider conventional audience in the American South. We're joined today by Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. This is an absolutely incredible website. As I have begun to make myself more familiar with the issues surrounding 9/11, I have found this particular site to be absolutely indispensable. It's at 911scholars.org. That's 911scholars, plural, .org. I suggest that if you go through this site piece by piece and bit by bit, you'll never look at the events of September the 11th, 2001, in quite the same way again. Jim, before the break, we were talking again about going back and forth between hardcore scientific evidence, both in the case of the Kennedy assassination and 9/11 that does not fit the official story at all, and the whole question of the political interpretation and spin that we should give to these things if we accept the fact that in both of these cases, the Kennedy assassination and 9/11, there is a body of scientific evidence that does not support the official findings at all. When we start getting into the political ramifications of this, where do you think the evidence suggests that we look in regard to a possible conspiracy, or even some would say a probable conspiracy, in the 9/11 tragedy?
Well, let me just preface this by emphasizing that the results I'm reporting have emerged from objective scientific research by a group of experts in both instances. In the case of JFK, a research group that I organized in 1992 included David W. Mantic, who has a PhD in physics and also an MD, who is board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy, and who's made sensational discoveries about the alteration of the X-rays to conceal a massive blowout to the back of the head, for example, in the case of the lateral cranial X-rays, and the addition of a 6.5-millimeter metallic slice in the case of the anterior posterior X-ray, but where the conspirators committed a blunder by connecting the shooting with this Mannlicher Carcano, given, as I already pointed out, that the man is supposed to have died from the impact of high-velocity bullets, and the Mannlicher Carcano only has a muzzle velocity of 2,000 feet per second and doesn't qualify as a weapon of that kind. Then Robert B. Livingston, M.D., a world authority on the human brain and an expert on wound ballistics, he supervised an emergency medical hospital during the Battle of Okinawa for injured Okinawans and Japanese prisoners of war. He was also the scientific director of the National Institute for Mental Health and the National Institute for Neurological Diseases and Blindness in both the Eisenhower and Kennedy administrations, and who concluded, based upon comparisons between the testimony of the physicians at Parkland, who were all experienced with gunshot wounds, unlike the two pathologists at Bethesda who performed the autopsy, which they'd never done with a gunshot victim before. There was a massive blowout to the back of Jack's head, from which two kinds of brain tissue, cerebellar and cerebral brain tissue, were excluding. It turns out if you compare their descriptions of the massive damage to the brain with the diagrams and photographs of a brain in the National Archives, they can't possibly be the same brain. The brain in the National Archives is virtually completely intact. It has a completely intact cerebellum, which is a compact part of the brain at the base, which had been seen extruding from at Parkland. And the evidence goes on.
We'll be back with Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Are you concerned about the high price of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page so you can get an idea of your discount price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, and all prescriptions are covered. And 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You can find Jim's site at 911scholars.org. I guarantee you, you won't be disappointed in the information that's there. You might be alarmed, however, at what that information might mean. Jim, getting back to what we were discussing before the commercial break, with both the Kennedy situation and 9/11, and this very complex relationship between scientific evidence and political analysis.
Yes, yes. Well, let me just mention a couple other members of the research group in relation to 9/11, which included Charles Crenshaw, M.D., who was present at Parkland Hospital as an intern when Jack was brought in, and then 2 days later was responsible for the care given to his alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald. Jack White, a legendary photo analyst who served as an advisor to the House Select Committee when it reinvestigated the case in 1976-77, and later to Oliver Stone when he created the film JFK. And finally, a late addition, John P. Costella, another PhD, this time with expertise in electromagnetism and the physics of light and moving objects. Now, we established not only that the autopsy x-rays had been altered and that a brain had been substituted during a supplemental brain examination for the original brain, but also that the home movie of the assassination, the so-called Zapruder film, was recreated by a very sophisticated process using optical printing and special effects. They had to do that, Mark, because the driver of the presidential limousine, William Greer, actually pulled the limousine to the left and to a halt after bullets began to be fired to make sure that he would be killed. It's very difficult to hit a moving target. And Jack was actually hit twice in the head during that brief interval. It only lasted about a second and a half or 2 seconds, during which the limousine was stationary. We have found more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up for the hit. We have found that, and this included now extra scientific information, where I got to know someone who had been a participant in the assassination, who worked for the CIA and who had forged 15 sets of Secret Service credentials for use in and around Plaza. I also got to know and had over 100 conversations with Madeline Duncan Brown, who was a mistress of LBJ, not his only mistress, and not the only mother of children he had in addition to his family, but she was the mother of his only son, Stephen, who was born in 1950. And Madeline became convinced that Lyndon had been involved in all of this. The execution itself appears to have been a military-style ambush. There were multiple shooters from multiple directions. Michael Badden, who headed the medical panel for the House Select Committee, observed on the occasion of the 40th observance of the assassination that if the magic bullet theory were false, then there had to have been at least 6 shots from at least 3 different directions. Well, we established all of those points. As I've already explained, the magic bullet theory is false. It's not even physically possible. We have established that Jack was hit himself 4 different times in the throat from in front, in the back 5.5 inches down from behind, and twice in the head, once from behind and once from in front. The shot from in front entering his right temple, a frangible or exploding bullet that blew brains out the back of his head with such force that a motorcycle patrolman to the left rear impacted with this debris thought he himself had been shot. A triangular patch of Jack's skull was found in the grass the next day by a medical student named Billy Harper. John Connolly was hit at least once and possibly as many as 3 times. Realize now that since the magic bullet theory is false, the shot to the throat and the shots that hit Connolly have to be accounted for on the basis of other shots and other shooters. One shot missed and injured a distant bystander. So if you assume the minimal for Connolly of 1 shot, Jack 4, and then 1 to the bystander, there had to be at least 6 shots. Connolly was hit from the side, Jack from in front and behind. So what Michael Badden said was true, although I think he meant it as a proof that the magic bullet theory had to be the case. We've disproven the magic bullet theory. We've proven that there had to have been at least 6 shots from at least 3 different directions. Now, the way in which it was executed appears to have involved elements of the CIA, the military, and the mafia. And I don't want to exclude the right-wing anti-Castro Cubans here, because they also had a role. The whole thing was covered up using the FBI as an investigative agency. The principals involved here appear to have been Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover, with financing from wealthy Texas oilmen. Now, if you get down into the motives here, Jack Ruby, who was like the local arrangements chairman on behalf of the mob and who had a much bigger role in all of this than the public has ever been allowed to understand, said that those who were involved here, the group was, it was bizarre. And if you're talking about collusion between, say, you know, the mafia, anti-Castro Cubans, Texas oilmen, the vice president of the United States and the director of the FBI to take out the president of the United States, that is bizarre. He also said they had very tangible reasons. Well, the Texas oilmen wanted to retain the oil depletion allowance, which Jack Kennedy was going to cut. The CIA wanted to retain its power. Jack was threatening to shatter it into 1,000 pieces. The mob wanted to regain its resorts and casinos in Havana, where it was running the biggest money laundering operation in the Western Hemisphere, and get Bobby off of their backs. The military had become disillusioned with Jack, who had not invaded Cuba against the Joint Chiefs unanimous recommendation, had gone ahead and signed an above-ground test ban treaty with the Soviet Union against their unanimous opposition, and now was pulling our advisors out of Vietnam, where they thought that a stand had to be taken against international godless communism. So the chiefs had come to view Jack as part of the problem, not the solution. Hoover wanted to stay on as director. Lyndon was seeing his opportunity to become president slip through his fingers. Richard Nixon, who just happened to be in town, in fact, was quoted that morning in the paper as saying he thought that Jack would be very unlikely to run with Lyndon again. There was going to be a vote in the Senate that afternoon on the Bobby Baker scandal, where Bobby Baker had been Lyndon's bagman when he was majority leader in the Senate. And it was widely supposed that after that vote, Lyndon's reputation would be so tarnished Jack couldn't run with him again. Jack had already told Evelyn Lincoln, his executive secretary, that he was not going to run with Lyndon again. So here was like a last opportunity. We have multiple indications of Lyndon's involvement, not only from Madeline Duncan Brown, but from Billy Saul Estes, who was a Texas Wheeler dealer, who was involved in a lot of schemes that brought a lot of money to Lyndon, John Connolly, and their cronies, who both of them have published books. Madeline's is entitled Texas in the Morning. Billy Saul's is entitled A Texas Legend. And there's a lot of other corroborating evidence. In fact, anyone who wants to go further in exploring all of this, including the objective scientific evidence about the X-ray alteration, the substitution of the brain, and the alteration of the film, can consult three collections of studies where I brought together the best experts on different aspects of the case. One is Assassination Science, 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza, 2000, and then the Great Zapruder Film Hoax, 2003. But I should also mention, Mike, that there's a website and a journal for advanced study on the death of JFK that I maintain online that you can find at assassinationresearch.com. And indeed, if you want a short study, a brief overview, if you go to 9/11 Scholars and just scroll down on the left-hand side, there's a section there entitled peer-reviewed articles, and you'll find a piece of mine entitled Thinking About Conspiracy Theories, JFK and 9/11, and you'll see where I use the results of our research on JFK as a springboard to get into 9/11, which is, of course, precisely what you'd like me to do at this point in time.
Yes, and again, it seems to me that in both cases, we're dealing with this complex interplay between the scientific evidence on the one hand, and then trying to get at the bottom of the larger political conspiracy that I am convinced was the case in the Kennedy situation. I am familiar with some of the situations that you cite in the JFK discussion. As this relates to 9/11, however, who do you potentially see as some of the potential political players in a conspiracy there? And on a political basis, is there a connection between the Kennedy event and 9/11 as far as who some of the larger political players may have been?
Well, let me just sketch a little more of our findings about 9/11, and then I will address who appears to have been involved.
Sure.
And who benefited, Mike. We've discovered massive destruction to the whole of the World Trade Center, not just the Twin Towers. There were actually seven buildings altogether. Buildings 3, 4, 5, and 6 all had very strange effects. They were, in one case, for example, building 4, half of the building is completely destroyed. The other half is just sitting there. In the case of building 6, there's a huge, enormous gouge that just is as though you had the core of the building was just extracted, and it's completely gone. I mean, it's just gone. In building 5 and elsewhere, you see a whole lot of kind of surgical, more or less circular or symmetrical holes that are in the buildings. In fact, I think Judy Wood has, a student of Judy Wood said he found as many as 50 holes in the photographic record. Building 3 has this huge gash down through the building. It's as though Paul Bunyan had a gigantic axe and he took a whack at it. All this stuff is really quite fascinating, and it's not at all obvious that these effects could possibly have been brought about by falling debris from the Twin Towers. Now, most of those buildings were turned into dust by some powerful source of energy, and you ask me what it could possibly be. We're not quite sure, but it surely is in the non-conventional weapons category. It might have involved lasers or masers or plasmoids. This is something we're trying to sort out, and it's a very difficult and challenging. I'll just tell you, the way they destroyed these buildings was quite ingenious, and they appear to have used techniques that are classified, not known to the public, probably technologies that were developed in the relation to the Star Wars program. I'm sure you've heard of HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, which is this facility located in Alaska that can deliver up to 3.6 gigawatts of energy virtually anywhere in the world with massive destructive force. Judy Wood discovered that as early as 1991, laser experiments could reflect off a mirror and come back down and hit a target on Earth. Really sophisticated stuff. Something was going on here that was highly unusual.
We'll be back with Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You can find his websites at 911scholars.org and also assassinationresearch.com. We'll be back. Mark Dankos, America and RBN. Stay tuned.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 3 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and, of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined this morning by Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You can find Jim's websites at 911scholars.org. He also has a dynamite site on the Kennedy assassination, which you can find at assassinationresearch.com. Jim, we were talking before the break about a whole host of things related to both of those situations. Go ahead.
Yes, well, there's additional evidence that what happened at the Pentagon has been a charade. According to the government, a Boeing 757 hit the building on the ground floor, and that it caused a massive destruction, including the collapse of the upper floors, that this Boeing 757 just barely skimmed the ground at over 500 miles an hour. Turns out the whole scenario here is preposterous and actually violates laws of aerodynamics. Just to make a few key points, Mark, The hit point on the Pentagon on the ground floor is only about 10 feet high and 16 or 17 feet wide. There are unbroken windows in the vicinity, unbroken fence, a couple automobiles in the immediate foreground. It's preposterous to assume that a 100-ton airliner with a 125-foot wingspan and a tail that stands 44 feet above the ground could have hit there and not left a massive pile of debris, including the wings. Not even the engines were recovered, not to mention the seats, the bodies, the luggage. I mean, we hear airliners losing your luggage, but this is ridiculous. The tail, one of the strongest structurally parts of the plane, was never recovered either. None of this debris is present, which indicates that whatever hit the Pentagon, if anything, and there's some who were there at the time who were skeptical about whether it was hit by any plane at all, the evidence isn't there to substantiate it. Not only that, but the three videos that the Pentagon has released show what might be the tail of a plane just above a parking gate. So you can just see sort of a part of the configuration there. There's also a plume of white smoke. Now, if you superimpose the silhouette of a Boeing 757, which is 155 feet long, and more than twice as long as the Pentagon at 77 feet is high, scale it to that size of that tail, then it would have been very conspicuous in this particular frame of these videos that are only three of some 84 that we believe would be informative about what actually happened, which means you can't see it where you ought to be able to see it. Even Bill O'Reilly, when he played one of these videos on the O'Reilly Factor, saying this was going to put all the conspiracy theories to rest, had to admit that he couldn't see the plane. Well, this is one of those situations where the absence of evidence is evidence of absence. It's like if I were to tell you there's a pink elephant in your living room and you go in and come back and tell me, Jim, I don't see any evidence of any pink elephant, I'd have to admit that I was only joking. I mean, here you'd have to see the plane if it were there. And third, and in my opinion even most important, a plane it acquires a compressed pocket of gas beneath its fuselage in flight, which grows larger the faster it's traveling. So I've discussed this with Neil Sagatavan, for example, who's both a pilot and an aeronautical engineer, who pointed out to me that even a Cessna at full throttle could therefore not get closer to the ground than, say, 15 feet. And he estimated that with a Boeing 757, it could not get closer to the ground than 60 feet at speeds of over 500 miles an hour attributed to it by the government's account, which means that the trajectory the government has foisted off on us isn't even aerodynamically possible. In fact, the ground there is so smooth and green from early photographs that you can tell easily that no plane with its massive wake and the results from the jet thrust of the engines, which would have plowed up the ground. I mean, at the low speed, the engines might have even been digging furrows in the ground. It's a preposterous account. It's not only false and provably false, it's again not even physically possible. So the government's really been pulling a lot of stunts on us. In fact, I've discovered that most of the black smoke coming up from the front of the Pentagon isn't actually coming out of the building, but from a series of dumpsters. So what we're really looking at are special effects, Mark, as astonishing as it is to believe. I think that this was necessary psychologically, and the whole event has to have been viewed as a massive psych-op on the American people, a shock and awe operation. So when Congress came, you know, the members of the House and the Senate came pouring out of the Capitol under the pretext that maybe the Capitol was going to be hit, they would look across the Potomac and see these massive billowing clouds of dark smoke. We've also found the story in Shanksville doesn't add up. We have reporters on the scene, and we have their reports that they can't find any evidence of a plane there. It's very strange. Some defenders of the government have gone so far as to suggest you can't see the plane because the plane disappeared into a mine shaft and went massively underground. Well, that's not only absurd on its face, but we all know that when miners are lost in some shaft, we go to great lengths to recover them with lots of excavation. None of that was done in this case. You'd think if there were a plane that went down some mine shaft, as incredibly improbable an event as that would be, that we'd have massive construction equipment out there and be doing everything we can to recover the airplane and the passengers. Who knows? Maybe in some fluke, one of them might have been survived. The whole thing is absurd. Now, you have to ask yourself, well, who would be in the position to pull this off, just as you have to ask yourself who would be in the position to alter the X-rays and change the brain and so forth. I mean, this is, you get evidence like this, it becomes very powerful in relation to alternative theories. In the case of JFK, I'll show how they impact on the different views about what happened when we return.
Very good, sir. We're with Jim Fetzer, Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You can find Jim's site at 911scholars.org and also assassinationresearch.com. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420 and see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420 or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Many Bible prophecies written thousands of years ago have been fulfilled in the past 100 years. Unknown by most people, even Bible-reading Christians, major end-time prophecies are being fulfilled today, including the one-world government, the one-world religion, the 10-nation confederacy of Daniel and Revelation, the mark of the beast, or 666. Speculation abounds about these ancient prophecies and what they might mean today. Now, one of the most foremost scholars on geopolitics, Dr. Michael Kaufman, who has stopped the ratification of international treaties in the U.S. Senate, has just released a DVD called World Events and Prophecy. His DVD explains how these and other major prophecies are being fulfilled today. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy. It's only $20 plus shipping and handling at discerningtoday.org or call toll-free 877-271-7639. Don't be caught off guard. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy at discerningtoday.org.
America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You can find Jim's website at 911scholars.org. And if you're interested in the Kennedy assassination, check out Jim's website there at assassinationresearch.com. Jim, take it away with where we were before the break.
Thanks very much, Mark. Well, the discovery that the X-rays have been altered is very important evidence. For example, those who would like to blame the crime on the mafia can't begin to account for how the mafia could have extended its reach into the Bethesda Naval Hospital and alter X-rays under control of naval officers, medical officers, and the president's personal physician, as well as agents of the Secret Service. pro or anti-Castro Cubans couldn't have substituted someone else's brain for the brain of JFK during a supplemental autopsy examination. The KGB, even if it, like Hollywood, had the ability to alter film, couldn't have got a hold of the original footage in order to recreate it and produce a Zapruder film, nor could any of these things have been done by Lee Oswald, who was either incarcerated or already dead. When you tie that together with 15 indications of Secret Service complicity and the fact that the limousine, which was a crime scene on wheels, was sent back to Ford Motor Company already Monday morning after the assassination on Friday and stripped down to bare metal and had the windshield replaced, a windshield which had a through-and-through bullet hole for the trajectory of the bullet that hit Jack in the throat, you have to ask yourself, well, who could possibly have the power and authority to bring these things about, including, of course, covering up the crime by the FBI? And it turns out that it cannot have been done without the involvement of very high officials of the American government, and in particular, all of our evidence points to J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson, as I've already explained. Now, in the case of the 9/11, take a look at the Pentagon, for example. Karen Kawatowski was a lieutenant colonel stationed at the Pentagon at the time, said that she didn't feel any impact with the building, that there was a massive fireball, that when she walked out of the building within minutes of this occurrence to see what was going on, she saw absolutely no indication of any aircraft there whatsoever. Well, this is perfectly consistent with the bulk of our evidence, that certainly there was no Boeing 757 that hit the building. And the point I've made about the series of dumpsters indicates that this was really a psychop in relation to Congress in particular. So you have to ask, well, who could be responsible for that? I'm sure we've all seen pictures of the Secretary of Defense out there walking around and inspecting the area. A lot of very odd things took place, including that there was a subsequent explosion that brought down these higher floors, so you didn't any longer just have that little 10-foot high, 16 by 17 feet wide opening, but now there was much more substantial damage. It looked a whole lot more like the kind of damage that might have been brought about if a plane had hit the building, and yet this didn't occur for 20 to 30 minutes after the initial hit. My suspicion is that the Secretary of Defense took a look and decided it didn't look bad enough, so you had some additional explosives detonated in order to make it look worse. Subsequently, you would have the whole area resurfaced and repaved so that now if you came along, you wouldn't realize that that was a perfectly green, smooth, unblemished lawn, because now you see where all this new work had been done, and you just imagine, well, that must have been where the plane hit the building. And yet we have no evidence of a Boeing 757 hitting the building at all. We also know, by the way, that Flight 77 allegedly went off of the radar screen in the Kentucky-Ohio border. It's not on the radar screen all the way back to Washington. Then something else pops into view, and the air traffic controllers are following it and saying they thought it was had to be a military a military plane, implying a small plane, because the maneuvers it was taking were much too demanding for a commercial airliner to have even performed. Now it turns out that Norman Mineta, our Secretary of Transportation, is in an underground bunker with Dick Cheney. This is right about 20 minutes after 9 in the morning. And he observes a young aide coming up to the vice president saying, "Sir, it's 50 miles out. Sir, it's 30 miles out. Sir, it's 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand?" And Cheney turns around and nearly bites off his head and says, "Of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?" Now, Mineta gave this testimony to the 9/11 Commission, but they tried to deflect it. They couldn't make sense of it, but it's perfectly obvious. The young aide was reporting the approach of a plane, whatever it was that eventually hit the Pentagon, and must have been in anxiety because the order was to not shoot it down. I mean, consider, the obvious thing would be to shoot it down. We know planes are being used as weapons. They've hit the World Trade Center. Now you have a plane approaching the Pentagon. If you shoot it down, you lose the passengers and the plane, but you don't also lose the personnel and the property at the target. So you want to shoot it down. It's an obvious decision to make. So the aide has to be in anxiety because it wasn't an order to shoot down, but a stand-down order. Now, the Pentagon has to be perhaps the most heavily defended building in the world. If the order had been to shoot down, it would have been shot down. But even if you consider debate, leave it as a matter of debate, whether whether it was a shoot-down order or not, Cheney did not warn the Pentagon. You have a very interesting situation here because Donald Rumsfeld reported they had no idea that the Pentagon was about to be hit. And here you have Norman Mineta testifying that Cheney's aware that this plane is approaching the building and doesn't issue a warning. There are those who believe he's impeachable on that grounds alone, but there's vastly more to it because it turns out that there were multiple war games that were taking place that morning, kinds of simulated terrorist attack that interdicted all the normal communication and cooperation between the FAA and NORAD. Webster Tarpley, in the second edition of his book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in the USA, in a new preface has inventoried as many as 15 different of these war games that were going on that Cheney appears to have been coordinating from that underground bunker. Now, I think the reason there were so many is that they were trying to figure out all the different ways in which the American military could respond to different kinds of information, and they're trying to create a matrix where none of those responses that would normally take place could take place, so they had like patches to block them. They had five main terror drills, but then they patched a whole bunch of little ones that had very specific forms of diversion so that the normal response would not take place. I mean, the situation's quite absurd. The planes at the World Trade Center were in the air for 50 minutes. The planes that hit the Pentagon and went down in Shanksville were flying around for an hour and 20 minutes. When I was living in Sarasota, Bradenton, Payne Stewart, the golfer's plane, lost contact, radio contact, with the ground, and they immediately set up fighters. And within 20 minutes, we had a fighter that was checking it out. It turns out there was decompression of the cockpit, and all the passengers had gone to sleep, from which they would never awaken. The plane was allowed to fly on automatic pilot all the way to North Dakota, where it ran out of gas and crashed safely, harming no one else. But the very idea that these planes could be flying around for these lengthy periods of time, especially once one had hit the building, is just stunning and a clear indictment that the military was not at all performing as it ought to have been performing. This had to involve collusion at a high level. I think General Richard Meyer is complicit here. Cheney appears to have played a key role. There are others who appear to have been involved, obviously, most obviously Donald Rumsfeld, but let me tell you some of the motivation that appears to have gone into this. Most Americans are unaware of this. The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld announced to Congress that the Pentagon was unable to track $2.3 trillion, that the Pentagon had $2.3 trillion in expenditures for which it could not account. Now, this was done on a Monday, Mike. Now, any sophisticated politician, of whom Rumsfeld is certainly an example, knows that you release bad news on a Friday. You hope it gets buried in other developments over the weekend and it doesn't develop legs by releasing a story like this on a Monday. You guarantee reporters are going to dog you all week and try to find out what's going on here, and the story's going to have legs. It's as though he knew that something was going to obliterate from consciousness this missing $2.3 trillion the day before 9/11, and that he could come back as early as the next evening, the next afternoon, and ask for hundreds of billions more in defense expenditures. The situation is astonishing. Not only that, but Larry Silverstein, who'd leased the World Trade Center about 6 months before 9/11 and 6 weeks before, insured it against terrorist attack for $3.5 billion, such that when there were two planes, he claimed it was two attacks and submitted a claim for $7 billion. He had a great interest in getting rid of those buildings. They were loaded with asbestos. They had about a 50% occupancy rate. He was losing a lot of money. He was under instructions to do something about the asbestos, but he couldn't demolish the buildings in a conventional way because all that asbestos with which the steel was coated would be exposed to the atmosphere. So he had a problem with those buildings. It's one of these amazing coincidences that he has this fantastic insurance against terrorist attacks, and then lo and behold, there's a terrorist attack, and it just takes care of these two gigantic white elephants for him. In addition, of course, Halliburton and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and these other major military industrial giants stood to gain these $100 billion cost-plus contracts, no-bid contracts, to go into Iraq in the case of Halliburton and feed our troops garbage. It's completely scandalous. Bush said that he had studied American history and discovered that the great presidents were the war presidents, so that he wanted to have a war so he could be war president. It's evident that the plan to attack Iraq was formulated before these guys even came into power, and this brings us back to this scheme for creating an American empire outlined by what's known as Project for the New American Century, which you can find online. Just put in Project for the New American Century, and you'll locate it on a Google search, where there was a master plan, now that America was the sole remaining superpower given the demise of the Soviet Union. There was an opportunity here that a small group, including William Kristol, including Donald Feith, including Richard Pearl, but also Condoleezza Rice, also Zelikow, Philip Zelikow, Richard Meyer was a collateral aspect. They all supported this idea of creating an American empire, a string of bases around the world, and especially moving aggressively into the Middle East to secure the natural resources there and to exert American power outward from that geopolitically strategic location. Now, this had been envisioned by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, in a book he wrote in 1997 entitled The Grand Chessboard, where he outlined a similar scheme, but he explained that the kind of financial expense that would be involved and the sacrifice, the personal sacrifice of sons and daughters, would make it very unlikely that the American people would support such a scheme, such an aggressive policy by the United States, which is very contrary to its history, because this would involve attacking nations that posed no threat to us, that hadn't attacked us, which we had never done before in our history, unless, he said, they were convinced that there was some external threat to the nation. So that, not, you know, and in fact, you find the same theme emerging in the Project for the New American Century, where a document entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses makes the same observation, that unless there's some catalytic traumatizing event, a new Pearl Harbor, it's most unlikely that there's going to be the opportunity, you know, the American people will seize this unique historical opportunity to create an empire greater than the world has ever seen. Now, it's all quite astonishing, but this appears to be exactly the blueprint that's being followed here. We've invaded Afghanistan. We've invaded Iraq. There was no evidence that even tied Osama bin Laden to these events. Most people have no idea. But that George Bush, during a recent press conference, acknowledged to a reporter's question that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. The Senate Intelligence Committee released its own report showing that not only was Saddam not in cahoots with al-Qaeda, but he was actually trying to track down his leaders and incarcerate and even kill them. And our FBI, our own FBI, last June acknowledged, in response to inquiries from Ed Haas of the Muckraker Report, that it had no hard evidence tying Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. That was the question that the Taliban posed when we asked for them to turn Osama bin Laden over to us. They simply asked, if you have evidence that he was involved, please tell us. Osama himself denied that he had anything to do with these events, and it was only in an original tape recording that we know to be authentic, and it was only in subsequent recordings, which were faked, in which it was claimed that he had been involved, and that here you find a heavier Osama who doesn't look like the original, and he's wearing jewelry and other things that are contrary to his religious beliefs and so forth. The whole thing appears to have been a massive scam. What we're doing now, and the reason we're lingering in Iraq, and we, Bush had no exit strategy because he had no intention to exit. We're creating 14 permanent bases there. We're building the world's largest embassy at the tune of about $1 billion. And we're forcing the Iraqis to negotiate away their rights to their own oil so that the multinational oil companies can exploit it. This is completely outrageous, but it's part and parcel of this administration's modus operandi. You may remember way back when they first came into office, there was this top-secret meeting between Dick Cheney and the representatives of the energy industry, which he wouldn't even allow the names of those who participated to be known. What they were talking about was turning the whole apparatus, the military force of the United States, over to the benefit of these private companies to maximize their profits, and that's what's going on today. The whole thing is completely outrageous and disgusting, but when you come right down to it, it's just as Jack Ruby said. I mean, you know, it's a little bizarre when you look at all the parties that are involved here, and yet their motives are all very practical, very tangible. They all have something to gain.
So, Jim, in your judgment then, in terms of a possible political explanation from what happened with 9/11, if you go back to this Project for a New American Century, is it safe to say that one of the leading theories on this is that you have the desire on the part of a multinational corporate interest to control Middle Eastern and Central Asian oil and natural gas resources and pipelines, and that the 9/11 scenario would have been the perfect cover, the perfect justification for bringing an American and military and American and British military presence into the region that was for reasons totally unrelated to what was advertised during 9/11, totally unrelated to bin Laden, totally unrelated to al-Qaeda, that in fact we may be seeing a simple play for control of, again, oil and natural gas pipelines and resources?
You're absolutely right. I mean, there are three principal reasons we're in the Middle East. One is oil. Another is Israel, because Israel stands to benefit from the destruction of all of its rivals to political and economic influence in the area. And the third is ideology. And just to show you how this all plays out, take Afghanistan as a nice case. We were negotiating with the Taliban about the construction of a gas and oil pipeline across northern Afghanistan. They were refusing to do it. We told them that if they agreed to do it, we'd bathe them in gold. If they didn't, we'd bathe them in bombs. They didn't. We did. Today, this massive gas and oil pipeline is under construction in northern Afghanistan. There are two huge permanent bases situated there, perfectly positioned to protect it. The president of Afghanistan is a former UNICAL oil official, and our ambassador to Afghanistan is another former UNICAL oil official. This is not rocket science.
Speaking of Karzai and Khalilzad, yes. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll return with Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Stay tuned.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. You can find Jim's site at 9/11 Scholars, plural, 911scholars.org, and also his site on the Kennedy assassination can be accessed at assassinationresearch.com. Wanted to remind Jim, as well as the listeners, that in the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to have a series of frequent commercial interruptions, and then there will be a longer time again for extended conversation up to the 10 o'clock hour Central Standard Time when we will be signing off. But we're fortunate to have Jim for not only the last couple of hours, but the last hour of this show as well. And I wanted to say that if you can would like to support the Republic Broadcasting Network, you can do so by contacting us at republicbroadcasting.org on the web or at 1-800-724-2719. That's republicbroadcasting.org or at 1-800-724-2719. And if you have any questions today, either for me or for Jim Fetzer, you can give us a call at 1-800-313-9443. That call-in number, again, is 1-800-313-9443. Jim, I wanted to ask you a question about, again, this whole business of the Kennedy thing on the one hand, 9/11 on the other. I have read a series of things on the Kennedy assassination over a period of many years. I availed myself of some of the House Assassinations Committee research going back to the 1970s. I've read Jim Marr's book on the subject, Crossfire. I've read Anthony Summers' book, Conspiracy, David Lifton's Best Evidence, and one or two other books come into play at this particular point, up to and including Michael Collins Piper's book, Final Judgment, which posits a role for the Israeli Mossad in complicity in the Kennedy assassination. That's interesting because as one looks at the thesis of Michael Collins Piper in regard to what he presents on the what Mike believes is the role of Ben-Gurion and the Mossad in this business with Kennedy, specifically an attempt to keep the Israeli nuclear program from International Atomic Energy Agency inspection, as the president allegedly was insisting that Dimona program should come under. But now when we turn to the 9/11 scenario and the Project for a New American Century, we see that there were a number of individuals connected with that report who have direct and indirect associations with the Israeli government. We notice that in the case of Larry Silverstein, this controversial owner of the World Trade Center towers at the time of the attacks, was not only involved in the insurance angle on this thing, as you've presented it to us here, but Silverstein is also one with links to Benjamin Netanyahu. He's an avowed Zionist, someone who has been linked up to theories that Israel may have had something to do with this 9/11 business, both in the case of the Kennedy assassination, again, keeping Michael Collins Piper's book Final Judgment in mind here, and then more recently in the 9/11 circumstance, the Project for a New American Century, the Larry Silverstein angle, and the suggested connections of these individuals to Israel. Is this something that should be examined? When we come back, we will examine that with Jim Fetzer of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. We'll also take a caller. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for Jim Fetzer. You can find him at 911scholars.org.